Hello, and welcome to show number 2413 of Eyes on Success, a weekly program covering a wide variety of topics of interest to people with vision loss. I'm Nancy Goodman Torpy.
And I'm Pete Torpy. Music is really important to a lot of blind people.
It is. I see it every day with our students. They're wonderful students. The music is vital. It is an area where the playing field can be level with sighted people, visually impaired people. The music is the music. Whether you're reading Braille music or you're reading print music, the music comes out orally. We all hear it. And it doesn't matter who's producing it and how they are getting access to the information. So I think it's a wonderful place to bridge communities.
And I'm one of those who certainly enjoys learning, playing, and enjoying listening to music.
And I enjoy listening to Pete play music. The Philemon M. D'Agostino Greenberg Music School, or FMDG Music School, is committed to helping visually impaired people pursue their study of music. We'll talk with Dahlia Sakas, the Director of Music Studies, about the instructional programs, performances, and remote learning opportunities offered by the school. But first, for our tip of the week. This week's tip comes from Dahlia Sakas.
My tip to everyone would be to take some time out and listen to a special piece of music. I think it's a great stress releaser, mind elevator, calming, but also can spur creativity. So I think New York Times often gives advice on music to listen to. One can find music in almost any source, and it doesn't always have to be classical music. It can be country, it can be hip hop, it can be anything. But to try to listen to something every day, I think music is a wonderful gift. And I've been very fortunate to make my career in music, and I think I'm very blessed, and then to have found this school where our students are, they're amazing. It's a very special place to be.
Eyes on Success is supported by
Able One, a portable Braille keyboard for any smartphone or tablet for typing and navigation that has been used by thousands of blind people. You don't even need to know Braille to use it. More information is at www.imhable.com. That's IAMHABLE.com. That was Madeline Mao, a student at the FMDG Music School, playing Arabesque No. 1 by Debussy. Now let's get started by meeting Dahlia.
My name is Dr. Dahlia Sakas, and I'm Director of Music Studies at the Philemon M. D'Agostino Greenberg Music School in New York City.
Most of our listeners, and I believe most of your students, have visual impairments. Do you?
No, I do not.
How did you get into teaching music to the visually impaired?
About 30 years ago, exactly 30 years ago, 1993, my friend Joe Fields, who was then music director of the school, also not visually impaired, gave me a call and said he needed a piano teacher. And he thought that my personality would fit in working with the students at the school. And asked if I wouldn't come in for an interview and apply for the job. And I was happy to, and I did. I applied, interviewed, and got the job. And the rest is sort of history. I thought I was just being a part-time piano teacher there, but my involvement with the school continuously grew. A new director came in, Leslie Jones. We hit it off big time, and we have been together running the school since she came on. I think it was about 1996 or 1997. And until then, we formed our own community music school, which we are now independent. And that was 5 years ago in 2019.
So you've been teaching piano lessons for many, many years.
Yes, even before coming on to the Philemon M. D'Agostino Greenberg Music School, or as we call it, the FMDG Music School, I had been already teaching privately for a long time. And I was, at that time, I was working on my doctorate as well.
Eyes on Success connects corporate sponsors with visually impaired listeners around the world.
More information about becoming a sponsor can be found at www.sponsor.eyesonsuccess.net.
This week's focus topic is the instructional programs, performances, and remote learning opportunities offered by the Philemon M. D'Agostino Greenberg Music School.
Well, Dahlia, maybe we can start by having you tell us a little bit about the history of the school and how it came to be.
The school is actually was begun in 1905.
Oh, wow.
It wasn't a school yet. There were two sisters, the Holt sisters. They were philanthropists in New York City. They went over to Italy and they were attending a concert, and they happened to notice a group of blind children really enjoying the music. And they came back to New York with this idea that many of their friends oftentimes didn't use their concert tickets. So they started a concert bureau where they collected unused tickets from their circle of friends and acquaintances and distributed them to the community of visually impaired people at the time. This grew then. They started to see that not only was going to concerts vital, but the community wanted to learn more about music. And they started a music school and formally started adding lessons and classes. And the music school was formed. And this was actually at the heart of the formation of Lighthouse of New York City, which then became Lighthouse International, which is now Lighthouse Guild. But the music school was sort of at the core of the inception of that agency or that organization.
Oh, how cool is that?
Yeah, I think it's pretty cool.
So what's the mission of the school?
So our mission statement is fostering education, access, and inclusion for people of all ages with vision loss.
Well, that's terrific, because I would guess educating blind students comes with some special challenges.
I don't know if I would call them challenges. When I started teaching at the school, I asked my friend Joe, I said, you know, I have no experience working with people with vision impairment. How can I do this? He goes, you're a musician. This is a music school. The students themselves will tell you what they need and how you can help them. And that proved absolutely true. Joe himself was sighted and he was fascinated with the school. He used to come and visit and he looked for the job at the school because he admired George Bennett, who was a blind pianist who was at the helm of the school back then. And George Bennett eventually hired Joe to work at the school. And I would feel that I've gotten my, if you want to call it, on-the-job training with the students of the school. It's foremost a music school. I think we have to be great musicians as teachers, but then we learn how to think outside the box and how to best adapt or give more access to our students. Primarily, of course, our materials. And ever since I started at the school, materials were of primary concern. And that means braille music, large print music, and having access to the materials, which at that time was not so easy to come by.
So I assume you also give instruction in reading braille music as well as print music.
Well, print music, yes. Braille music, I do know I'm a very elementary braille music reader. I have a doctorate in piano performance, but for me to try to even get through a Debussy prelude or anything like that in braille music, I would be hard-pressed. We have braille music instructors at the school, and they provide all the braille music training to our students. When the student gets into the studio with a piano teacher. They have their Braille music. The piano teacher may have their Braille music or their print music, but you meet at the music. It's all the same, and the lesson can proceed. Yeah, no, I do not teach Braille music. I can understand when the student is having a difficulty with something and interpreting something in the Braille music, but I would not presume to be a Braille music reader or teacher.
I actually went to a school for the blind when I was young, and in second grade, I had a blind piano teacher teach me how to play piano. And then they tried to teach me Braille music, which I thought at the time was very complicated. But fortunately, I had a little bit of sight, and if I held my face real close to the music, I could read the music, but I couldn't play and read at the same time, so I had to memorize everything.
Mm-hmm, of course. Well, that is still the case now with Braille music or large print music. You read the music first, you memorize it, and then you can play it. That has not changed much in the years. When students are confronted with a sight reading exam for schools, we like to change the name and call it a literacy exam because our students are certainly literate, but they cannot read something at sight or immediate. We have some researchers now in the field that are actually exploring different ways to make the music more immediately accessible to someone who wants to read something immediately. So these are all in the working stages and is still in the minds of researchers.
So does your school get involved at all with any of these digital music sources? I know Pete frequently uses Band in a Box to read new scores or even create a score for a piece he's written. Do you use any of those?
Absolutely. Our students study technology when they have computer aptitude, or you know, when their skills with JAWS or NVDA are good, or VoiceOver, and they use GarageBand. We use the Dancing Dots software to produce Braille music, so they will learn Lime and use Lime Aloud for notating music. Reaper, Pro Tools, Sonar, a lot of the different programs for producing audio recording.
You are being recorded right now in Reaper, and I will do the first cut of editing in Reaper.
Ah, that's very good. Yes, so we teach Reaper. Logic is another one. So there are the different programs. Some programs are more easily accessible, others are not. This is not my area of expertise, but our teachers are always looking for new and better ways to access these programs.
And these days, there are also some very excellent scoring programs, such as MuseScore, which is a free scoring program, and Finale. They're very accessible these days. Sibelius, right?
Yes. I don't believe Finale is accessible. Sibelius is accessible, but limited to certain editions. I don't think the scripts have been kept up to date. MuseScore, yes, MuseScore, we're watching very, very carefully and have begun using MuseScore because of the development that they have said eventually that one will be able to go from MuseScore directly into Braille. That is a little bit far off still, but it's happening. SoundMyBraille is out there, another source of transcription. We are still very much using the Dancing Dots technology, Goodfeel. We get the music in, and we use Finale to make the original score, and then use XML transfers that can come from MuseScore or Finale, and then gets into Lime and transferred over to Goodfeel. And we have an excellent proofreader who then produces the Braille music for us.
Oh, that's great. The way I used to learn new jazz tunes years ago, before all these electronic and digital methods came along, was Nancy would plunk down the melody into a little cassette tape recorder, and then I could learn the melody that way.
And then I'd play it again and read out the chords. And some of these chords in jazz, it'll take you 5 minutes to read out the chord because they're so complicated.
With all the suffixes, yeah.
So that time through, I wouldn't bother trying to keep up with the rhythm, but I had already plunked out the melody, and so he knew how that went, and then he could listen to the chords.
Sure. So students all have iPhones these days or iPads, and the audio recorder device on that is great. So they can record lessons. I record for them. We have Dropbox links. You know, students that do not read Braille or large print, there's audio files that they can use to learn music as well.
So when I was in high school, I actually went to a Saturday kind of prep program at the Manhattan School of Music, where we learned music theory, composition, and arranging, and that's where I had my piano lessons, etc. Is your school a weekend thing like that, or is it a full-time school, or what?
I'm happy to hear about Manhattan School of Music. That's my alma mater as well. I got my master's there. And several of our teachers, we have a nice connection with the Manhattan School of Music. We are considered a community music school. We belong to the, there's a group of community music schools in New York City that the leaders of or the directors of, they get together once a month. There's the Bloomingdale House of Music. There's the Diller Quayle School of Music. The Harlem School of the Arts, and we are one of those community music schools. We are not a full-time school. The young students, the youth, attend regular full-time schools, either integrated or there is the New York Institute in New York City, which is a school for visually impaired. And we also have adults in the program, but we do not offer degrees. We're not a degree-offering institution. We accept anyone. You audition for us, yes, you have a musical evaluation with us, but that is purely for placement. We don't deny anyone any service as long as you have a vision impairment. You are welcome to take lessons at our school. And the reason is the people with vision impairment, the lessons are heavily subsidized. So the cost is much less than attending another community music school or taking lessons on the outside. The adults come usually during the week for their lessons, and we reserve Saturdays for the children. We have what we call a CMPYP, the Comprehensive Music Program for Young People. This is a comprehensive program. It's sort of a group of classes that are offered on Saturdays, as well as individual lessons. Students often arrive in the morning and spend most of their Saturdays with us. There's a chorus. I have a youth chorus. There's an instrumental ensemble. They take tap dance classes. We have music appreciation. We have enrichment sessions where we bring in different musicians to demonstrate their instruments, where they can also feel the instruments. We had a Lithuanian kankles player. And last week for Lunar New Year, we had a Chinese guzheng player, both sort of zither-like instruments, but from their respective countries. We had a string quartet last fall come in to play for the kids, and they got to see the whole family of stringed instruments. And then we offer guitar, flute, saxophone, drums, piano lessons on Saturdays. So that's it, really.
So that's great. You offer a full range of musical instrument instructions, plus a lot of courses on just knowledge about music and other functions of music.
And music technology, if the student wants that. There are some adult students studying music technology, audio recording, and the use of the programs. I mean, it's not easy to get into Reaper Pro Tools without understanding how they work with the assistive technology. So that's where, our teachers can help.
So this sounds like a fabulous program, and anybody within range of New York City could presumably apply. Is there an umbrella organization, national or international, where people might be able to find similar programs where they live?
I'm not aware. There is a program out in California. David Pinto has a program, but I believe his is more geared to youth. We sort of run the gamut from 5 to 90, in terms of age range. We operate all week long. We operate every day. Yeah, I'm not aware of any other program.
Well, I guess it can't hurt to look for something similar where you live, though.
Do you offer any remote instruction at all?
Absolutely. We offer remote instruction. And that was the, if you can say anything good about the pandemic, that made us be very flexible in terms of offering remote instruction. We pivoted very quickly with our classes. Even the choruses met. I met with students individually or in pairs or trios for the chorus. They learned how to record themselves, send them in, and we made group recordings. That's when we embarked on exploring dance, which is often neglected. People who are visually impaired don't attend dance concerts or performances as a rule, I found.
You know, it's interesting you talk about that. I remember at the School for the Blind, again, when I was in elementary school there, they taught us how to tap dance. And I thought that was interesting.
Yeah, well, tap is great. Our tap teacher, Max Pollock, who is on the United States postage stamp, dedicated for tap dance, he is the figure on that postage stamp.
Oh, how cool.
Yeah, he's an international artist in his own right. He's an excellent tap dancer and an excellent teacher. And I think he enjoys working with our students. But during the pandemic, we decided to explore the realm of dance. Especially, we began with The Nutcracker. The Nutcracker by Tchaikovsky is an iconic ballet. When you get to the holiday season, everybody talks about, oh, going to see The Nutcracker, or how many Nutcracker performances are there in a town in New York, New Jersey? You know, every year the Nutcracker is performed. So we thought, let's introduce this work to our students and sort of dissect it and approach the work through the music of Tchaikovsky. We created boxes of materials. We had a toe shoe that were donated from the American Ballet Theater. We put some tulle in there. We had in Braille a list of themes that Tchaikovsky used in The Nutcracker. We had a synopsis of the story. Of course, a candy cane. And we included a Nutcracker itself. And it was a 6-week class where 30 minutes was devoted to the music, an analysis of the story, listening to the music, and then 30 minutes was focused on dance. And we had a dance instructor. And all this was done over Zoom.
And you sent those boxes to everybody so they could touch and feel the artifacts.
Yes. If they registered for the class, they got a big box in the mail, and they had their box with them at the time when the class took place. And we would explore the items in the box and the Nutcracker. And this afforded enough time to explain the story, talk about the dance, to experience the dance through dancing like snowflakes or through the different music that Tchaikovsky uses through the Nutcracker. This was very successful. And we then did this with Aaron Copland's Rodeo. We also did it with Alvin Ailey's Revelations. So these were good things that happened during the pandemic that allowed us to explore the world of dance. And with Zoom, we offer several classes. In fact, we have 3 classes in the offering this spring that are remote over Zoom, and anyone can register for them, you know, anywhere around the country.
Wow, that's great. You have a full range of remote instructions, and one can even learn a new instrument that way, huh?
That's absolutely true. We had a ukulele class going for a while there.
Wow, I'm impressed with the breadth and depth of your programs that serve a large range of people.
Yeah, it's been really great. I think one of the things we're really grateful for, as you mentioned earlier, the technology, the development of the technology to produce Braille music. That has been such a big boon. When I started teaching at the school, we had to wait a long time. Again, I'll go back to my first word, materials, materials, materials. Now that we can produce in-house our own Braille music for the choruses, for the piano students, for the violin students, that's been such a blessing. You don't have to rely on outside transcribers. You have the technology, and that's moved the performance level higher. We're able to do more performances in a given year. We can access relevant music. We're not subject to just what's available at the NLS, but we can get other music, transcribe it, use it, perform it, and do it. That's another thing that I should mention, actually. We have a wonderful partnership with the New York Public Library. When we closed down in 2019, everything went into storage. Through the years now, we have worked together with the New York Public Library. And just last fall, we delivered all of our Braille music collection, about 2,500 to 3,000 scores, And they have shelved them, and the general public now has access to this Braille music library. So they don't have to just go to the NLS. They can go to Andrew Haskell Library and browse the shelves and borrow Braille music.
Wow, what a great resource. Nice.
And now we've just put our digital searchable database online. Anybody can browse and see. I have transcribed so many choral works throughout the 25 years that I've been at the helm of the choruses. If you're an alto and you're singing in Kansas and you need something in Braille, look through our collection. If it's not there, we'll transcribe it for you. That's also another thing that we've been able to do just this past semester. So these are wonderful developments. And I think there's so many more that can happen in the future. I think there's so much more potential.
Well, I'm glad we got in touch with you. This sounds like a fantastic resource that people can make use of in many ways.
That's great. Yeah, I'm glad you got in touch with us as well.
And that was a choral group from the FMDG Music School called the Guavatones performing a white winter hymnal. Now for this week's final item, how to learn more about the Philemon M. D'Agostino Greenberg Music School and how to contact them.
Well, Dahlia, if people want to find out more about the school and perhaps sign up for some of these courses, either in person or remotely, what would you tell them to do?
Our website is a wonderful place to start. fmdgmusicschool.org. That's all one word. FMDG stands for Philemon M. D'Agostino Greenberg Music School.org. And the phone number there is 315-842-4489. And you'll probably speak with Richard Tai, who is our program manager, and he can give you all kinds of information about fees or timetable, the course schedule. Yeah, that's how you get in touch with us.
Is there an email address?
Yes, music@fmdgmusicschool.org.
Do you have a social media presence?
We do on Facebook, the Philemon M. D'Agostino Greenberg Music School. And we post regularly. We have some exciting posts, yes.
You can find all of that information by clicking on the show notes for this episode, which is 2413, along with links to their Twitter, YouTube, and Instagram pages.
That's it for today's show. Next week on Eyes on Success, in honor of the upcoming total eclipse of the sun, we will be doing an encore presentation of an old show where we talked with Morgan Renberg, a blind astronomer, about how he's able to do his job. Astronomy is often thought of as based on visual observations, but as it turns out, most raw astronomical observations aren't visible to anybody. Morgan Renberg just does things a little bit differently, but is able to do his job, in spite of being blind.
Thanks for joining us this week, and we hope you'll join us again for next week's show.
You've been listening to Eyes on Success, hosted and produced by Nancy Goodman-Torpy and Peter Torpy.
You can access the full archive of previous shows, subscribe to the podcast, and much more by going to our website, www.eyesonsuccess.net. If you have questions about anything you've heard on the show or have suggestions for future shows, send an email to hosts@eyesonsuccess.net.
Thank you for listening and have a nice day.